My talk is motivated by some integration problems for groups or quantum groups. So let's just start with the simplest situation. When we have a compact group of matrices, so that's compact, and actually it might be finite. Okay, so these are n-by n matrices, so I can consider the n-square matrix coordinates. I will denote them by uij, so these are complex functions, matrix coordinates. So the integration problem is to, the general integration problem is to compute the integral of an arbitrary product of these things with respect to the higher functional. So integration problem is to compute integral of ui1, j1 up to uik, jk. You can also add some adjoints if you want. And then we have a similar problem for quantum groups, right? This is for compact groups, and there is a notion of quantum group I will explain a bit later, and we have a similar problem. A similar problem for quantum groups. Okay, so before getting into the exact statement, let me just give you a kind of results that that is really nice in this sense. So if you take, well, let me give you a motivating result without details of proof or statements, and then it will be clear what the relation with the free probability and the conference is. So let's take G to be the orthogonal group. Well, what's known about these matrix coordinates is that when n goes to infinity, they become Gaussian and independent. Okay, so then goes to infinity, the uij become Gaussian and independent. Okay, so now what happens in the quantum group case? So there is a quantum group. I won't give you right now the definition that I will call 1 plus. It's a kind of free version of 1n. Okay, so quantum group. And what will happen in this case, so we'll still have an integration over it, this matrix coefficients, so we can ask about the same problems, in particular about the distributions of these uijs. So what will happen here is that this will become semicircular and free. Okay, so if you have this kind of statement, I will prove it and give the precise statement a bit later. Is a kind of free probability interpretation of this liberation operation, which is actually algebraic and it's a quantum group construction. So what's the interest for us? I mean, if you don't care, let's say, about quantum groups, you're just here in free probability. Well, you see that Gaussian becomes semicircular, independent becomes free, as it should be. So one may expect that if you have enough generalizations of these results, this will give you a kind of correspondence between classical measures and also classical measures, but viewed from the point of free probability. So I will, in what follows, I will explain, so first this result, then a number of other results, and at the end we'll end up with some kind of table with one row consisting of the groups. So here is ON, and then a classical measure, and then a free measure. That's somehow the end of the talk. Okay, so let's first discuss this this result. So I will more generally discuss what happens for the orthogonal group, the unitary group, and the symmetric group. So these are the three basic objects. We'll see a bit later why exactly this three compact groups are the simplest ones. Okay, so this is joint work with Benoit Collins, and we published it in two papers in publications of RIMS and GFA 2007. Okay, so let's first look at ON. Well, the quantum group that I wrote here doesn't really exist, so I have to work with Hopf algebras. So what should be the Hopf algebra of functions on this pre-orthogonal quantum group? So So let's first give it a name, A of n, so orthogonal algebra of n. Then, so I put C star. We need some generators. This will be the matrix coordinates, right? So Uij are some generators. So U is an entire matrix. And now, what's the relation to be satisfied by this matrix? Well, it has to be orthogonal. So orthogonal means that all these elements are self-adjoint, and then the inverse is the transpose. Okay, so I take this universal sister algebra, right? I have n squared generators and all these relations. So what's the point? Well, this is the Hopf algebra. So the co-multiplication is like this. Uij goes to sum over k ykj. There is also an antipole, and all the axioms are satisfied for Hopf algebras. So heuristically, we can say that A of n is somehow the algebra of functions on a certain quantum group, which is a free version of n. Okay, so that's a quantum group, which doesn't exist, of course. Okay, so all this construction is due to Wong around 95. Okay, so now we have our Hopf algebra. We should state this problem now. So first of all, so we have these coefficients. What is the integration? Well, there is a general result by Voronovich stating that if you have a Hopf algebra satisfying the three table axioms, this will have a Haar functional. Okay, so we're using the result by Voronovich, 87, stating that in this situation, I mean, if all the good axioms are satisfied, we have a functional that I will denote as an integral going from A of n to C. Okay, so we're in this position. We have this algebra, elements inside, functional. So the problem makes sense, the integration problem, and more particularly this problem here. So what happens when n goes to infinity with this coefficients uij? Okay, so now since we have everything, we can state the theorem. So then goes to infinity, what I wrote there, uij become semicircular and free. Okay, so what's the proof of this theorem? It's in several steps. So the first step, I have a claim here that if you take the sum of the diagonal entries of your matrix, it's the sum Uii, this is semicircular, 1 minus 2, 2. Well, how is this related to that? It's a kind of corollary, right? So if these variables are semicircular and free, if you sum n of them, you'll get a semicircular element. So, I mean, if this is true, this must be true. So let's prove this first. Then we'll see how it works in general. So how to compute the moments of this thing? So you have, this is the so-called the character of the representation. I mean, you sum the diagonal entries. Actually, that's true for fixed n, for any n greater than 2. But it's better to forget about this and to say that it's true like this. It will make the link. Okay, so we want, this is a character, so what, for computing the moment, we have to integrate the powers of a character, and this is well known. It's these numbers count certain fixed points of the tensor power of U. So we're getting into a representation theory problem. We have this U, which can be regarded as a matrix representation, a fundamental one. We want to take the tensor powers and compute the number of fixed points. Well, this is algebras and categories, diagrams. I mean, we won't get farther than that. So the point is that what we know about you is that you are self-adjoint, so one should be inside you, tensor U. That's the only thing we know about it. Now, this vector here corresponds to this diagram that we already know from the talk of Vaughan. It appears all the time. So this would mean that the category somehow of intertwiners between tensor powers of U, well, this is generated by this thing there. So it's temporally lib. So in particular, the number of fixed points is the number of such diagrams, so it's a Catalan number. Well, it's like in the classical case. I mean, it's there are vectors x such that u times u, x times 1 equals x times 1. Well, and this thing can be regarded as a co-representation. I don't want to get into all these Hopf algebra things. I mean, there's a lot of definitions which are basically just extensions of what happens in a classical case. Okay, so now, once we prove this claim, well, we can switch to a more interesting problem. Maybe what we want to do now is to solve the integration problem. Okay, so this is more particular, much more particular. We're trying to do something much more general, like to compute all these integrals. Integration problem. Okay, so what's the point with all these integrals? So we want to compute ui1, j1, u, let's say, i2k, j2k. If you take all of them, I mean, with all the possible indices, they will form a matrix. So I is this multi-index, i1 up to i2k, and j1 up to j2k, I'll denote it j. So this will be a big matrix. And by basic facts of representation theory, this is just a projection onto this fixed point space. This is the projection, orthogonal projection, onto the space of fixed points. So the integration problem is actually to take these fixed points and the orthogonal projection on it and to compute a particular coefficient of this matrix. Okay, so how to do it? We already know that these fixed points, they are given by diagrams. So we have this space of fixed points. Diagrams here, so that's a basis formed by diagrams, and we want to compute the projection, which goes like this. Well, so this is of course like linear algebra, so we have a basis here. If the basis would be orthonormal, the formula of the projection is very simple. The problem is that this is a linear basis, but it's not orthonormal. So what will come into the picture will be the Gram matrix of this basis. So the Gram matrix will appear. So this will denote it by G. So if you take two diagrams PQ, well, if you look at the particular embedding, well, the scalar product is like this, N to the number of loops PQ. This means I take two temporally lib diagrams P and Q, I put them one on top on the other, and then I count the number of loops which appear. So that's the Gram matrix. This is a well-known matrix. It appears in papers by Di Francesco, for instance. Di Francesco calls it the Meander matrix. Okay, so now what's the formula? So as I was telling you, this thing will just depend on this matrix because of this picture. So the formula that we call Weingarten formula is that this integral, I will write it again, it's the same, is sum over all pairs of diagrams of the inverse of the Gram matrix. Okay, so I take the inverse, and then some numbers here, delta pi, pi, delta qj. Okay, so that's the inverse of this matrix. And these symbols here, so they are 0 or 1, each of them. So they express the pairing between diagrams and indices. So once you have a diagram and a multi-index, you can put the multi-index on the points of the diagram, and if strings join equal pairs of indices, it's 1, if not it's 0. Okay, so that's the Weingarten formula, which is similar to what to the one that Benoit wrote down a few days ago. I mean, it's valid for any compact group or compact quantum group, this kind of thing. Okay, so now we're having a feeling of what's to be done in connection with this integration problem. The main thing is to invert a Gram matrix. So there is no formula for this inverse. I mean, you can try with Maple for small values of n, but in general there is no too difficult problem to invert it. So what we have is basically asymptotic results. So asymptotically, it will be quite easy to work with this formula, because you see, you have only powers of n. When n goes to infinity, only the smallest or the biggest coefficients will appear, and you will be able to invert this matrix. Okay, so that's the first application. Now, we're getting to the third part of the proof, so let me just tell you quickly why this implies that these variables become semicircular. Well, the integral of uij power to k. So I have to take all these variables to be equal to this uij. So all these I indices are equal, same for j's. So in particular, the symbols will be 1. So this number over there will be just this sum here. Gram minus 1 pq. And well, if you look at what happens exactly when n goes to infinity, you get semicircular. And if you well, that was for the first part. I won't get into details. For the second part, it's also possible to prove it. I mean, freeness is also a question about computing these kind of integrals, right? I mean, you have this definition, the very first definition of Weyl-Kulesz. We have to check it. So what you have to check is that certain integrals are zero. You can do it. It's a bit technical. I won't get into details. Here. Oh, yeah.
Why is it using formulas for counting various planar diagrams?
Yeah, basically, when I get the semicircle law, it's a bit like here. I mean, what finally the moment is just the number of diagrams. So, but rescaled by something. I mean, it's not that you really have to use this formula. I mean, for the point is that when any, this will be true when n is fixed. This is true when n is fixed, the proof that I wrote here. But this is not true when n is fixed. So you really have to, what will count will be diagrams. I mean, you have to have p equal q for this thing to be biggest, and you can invert. It's a standard. Okay, so now I have the proof of this thing over here. So with this representation theory thing that you have a group and a quantum group, well, at level of these coefficients, we get the Gaussian law, which gets to the semicircular one. That's very nice. So let's try to do it for other groups, see what happens. So the next group is the orthogonal one. So what's the relevant algebra? The Hopf algebra, once again, this is was constructed by Wong in 95. So take the generators. And you want to put unitary, right? We're getting a unitary algebra. The point is that also the transpose has to be unitary. This is not true for abstract elements. If a matrix is unitary, the transpose is not unitary. So I have to add it in the axioms. I'll call this bi-unitary. Okay, so you transpose unitary. Okay, so once again, it's a Hopf algebra. We have an integration. We can ask what are these coefficients. And the answer is that we then goes to infinity. Uij becomes circular and free. Okay, so that's similar to what happens in the classical case for the unitary group. This become complex Gaussian and independent. Okay, so I have a second result of this type. Now let's switch to we start somehow on the two basic results. Let's switch now to the symmetry group. That's going to be more interesting. So a few number of new problems will appear there. Sorry? Yeah, it's true for all n. Well, that's a problem which is quite subtle. I mean, it's true for all n, but these things are n big enough, actually. It has to be greater than, no, it's true for any n. But I won't get, I mean, these are somehow algebraic things, because it's true for any n. I'd rather speak about analysis and let n goes to infinity and focus on that kind of result. So the fact that it's true for any n, it's an algebraic thing. It's basically it's a tempered Lie planar algebra. The fusion is all the same for all n. So that's algebra. Let's speak to analysis. Okay, so let's take the permutation matrices now. Permutation matrices. Well, who are these coefficients now? Uij. Well, decide the characteristic functions of elements sending j to I, in this case. So you see, these are characteristic functions of projections in the sister algebra sense. So that's somehow pretty bad for what we want to do, because there's nothing to do. I mean, the distribution is the same for all n. It's a projection of trace 1 over n. So we definitely won't have this kind of statement. So what we do, we restrict a bit attention, so we'll take the following variables, u11 plus u22 up to u tn tn, where t is in 0, 1, and I have to put an integral part here. So this is a so-called truncated character. The character is the whole sum, and I truncate. Okay, so if this is u, so that's the character and the sum over here, and I take the sum to t, 0, 1. Okay, so I'll look at the distributions of this element. This will be the relevant things which will produce a result like that. So what happens with these truncated characters? Well, for Sn, I t when n goes to infinity. This is Poisson of t. Okay, so that's a well-known thing. I mean, the character counts somehow the number of fixed points, and it's classical probability that you get the Poisson law in the limit. Now for As of n, which once again will be the Hopf algebra defined somehow in the same manner with generators and relations. Chi t will become free Poisson of t. Okay, so this is the result which extends that one and the one about the unitary group. Okay, so let's draw a conclusion. These are the three basic examples of this this thing. So let's put them in a table. Let's all erase this proof. So freeness, now it's inside. So why don't I take only the character? If I would take only the character, this would be Poisson, free Poisson, it would look okay. But since I put the T here, I have an independent semigroup here, and the free semigroup here. So when I state this, freeness is here and independence is here. So that's well, the asymptotic freeness, and the problem with the symmetric group, it happens when you take like sums. I mean, they have to have some size. There's the matrix U. If you take sums over something which has a non-zero area with respect to this one, the sum over here will become free with respect to the sum over here. That's what happens on the diagonal. I mean, if you take a sum of tn terms with t greater than 0 and of other tn terms, this will become free asymptotically. You just can't take one of them because it will be a projection now all the time. Okay, so now let's draw a table. So all this depends on a group. Then we have a classical law, and then a quantum law. Okay, so what I'm talking about is this law of the truncated character when n goes to infinity. So we saw On, Un, Sn. The classical law is Gaussian parameter t. Here you get semicircular of parameter t, then complex Gaussian parameter t circular of t, and finally Poisson of t, free Poisson of t. Okay, so the problem is now what to do, to consider more groups. Eventually leading to a kind of axiomatization of the whole thing. I mean, that's the point. And then other computations. By other computations, I mean, instead of taking these truncated characters here and here, you can take some other quantities, and maybe if you choose them well, they will fit in the table and make it bigger and bigger, the table. Okay, so in rapport, I'll discuss these two issues. So the things will be more technical, and most of them actually are subject to work in preparation. So it's not guaranteed that it will be as clear as this was. Okay, so the first thing, let's try to construct a force example. The first example will be the hyperoctahedral group. That's the simplest thing we found besides these three examples. So let's take the hyperoctahedral group. That's the symmetric group of the hypercube in Rn. So this is joint work with Bichon and Collins. It can be found on archive 2007. The problem is to find a free quantum version of this, and it's kind of tricky because what's the definition of HN? This is the symmetric group of the cube. If you look at the quantum symmetric group of the cube, what happens is that you will get a twist of On at the point minus 1. I mean, this is a ONQ, a Q deformation, and Q equals minus 1. It's kind of strange. I mean, don't try to understand why this is the symmetric group of that, because I don't really understand either. So, but then that's an algebraic result found by Julien. So this is it. And of course, this don't work. I mean, this, you won't have freeness inside here. You'll have a kind of Q independence with Q equals minus 1, whatever that means. So that's the wrong way. Okay, so what's the right way now? The hyperoctahedral group is also the group of symmetry of, if you take the n segments, right, passing through the middle of the faces, or equivalent if we take the dual polyhedron, and so octahedron, I guess. These things have the same symmetry group. And now if you take the quantum symmetry group of this picture over here, that's going to work. It's not going to be the same. So this leads to HN plus the free version that we're looking at. Okay, so maybe this is a bit heuristical. Let me give you the definition of the corresponding algebra with generators and relations. So what I want to do is to construct an algebra that I will call, of course, H of n. So H of n is by definition, once again I take my generators, n square of them, u is n times m. And then I have to put a condition here. Well, what's the relevant condition about the hyperoctahedral group? So when you regard the elements of HN as permutation matrices, these are exactly usual permutation matrices, but you allow plus or minus one signs instead of ones. So one relevant condition about this matrix would be that, well, first it's orthogonal. And then on each row and each column, if you take elements which are not equal, they will have product zero. That's because you have this permutation matrix. Well, AB equals zero on rows and columns. Okay, so we'll call this matrix satisfying this. We'll call it cubic. We take the algebra generated by that. And that's a Hopf algebra. So now we can ask about the same questions, compute laws of truncated characters. So for this purpose, as I told you, we have to compute some diagrams at some point and then to invert the gram matrix. So what are the diagrams in this situation? Yeah, for graphite we have one. So it's you basically, in terms of planar algebra, you take the adjacency matrix of the graph, you put it in a two box, and you take the planar algebra generated by it. In terms of quantum groups, you divide the AS of n when n is the number of vertices by some ideal, saying that edges are preserved. Okay, so now diagrams, yeah, as Dietmar was saying, this construction is a kind of quantum group version of some planar algebra thing, and the planar algebra related to this graph is the Fuchs-Catalan one. So it's best to get Fuchs-Catalan diagrams. So here they are. Well, if you look at these conditions, I won't get into details, you get that the relevant diagram satisfied by this matrix are this one and this one. So these are temporary Lie diagrams, but they have some extra property, namely that if I put ABBA here, and then ABBA here, and here, you see all the strings join A to A's and B's to B's. That's a so-called Fuchs-Catalan algebra, what they generate into colors. Okay, so now once you have the diagrams, you compute gram matrices, and you can state the results. So this law of chi t. Well, I need to give you two laws, the classical one and the quantum one. So let's first discuss the classical law. Let's call it bt. That's supported by z. Okay, so I put the Dirac mass at the point of Z, and then the density is given by a Bessel function. Well, I won't write down the formula. Okay, so it's a kind of, we call it Bessel law, you think? Now in the quantum case, I mean here, well, the law, not here of the character, of the square of the character, there is a slight problem here. This is pi free convolution pi t, where pi is the free Poisson of 1, and pi t is free Poisson of t. So is this true? Well, by counting diagrams, you get to this Fuchs-Catalan numbers, and this lead you to this. If you understand the particular case of the planar algebra theorem Dietmar talked about, that if you take, this is the free product of two temporary Liebs, so at the level of characters or Poincaré series, whatever, you will get a free product of the corresponding things. Okay, so this seems here because in the classical case it's a kind of Bessel law, or at least that's how I call it. We'll call this a free Bessel law. Okay, so all this fits into the table here. We can add one more row, Bessel of T, free Bessel of T. Well, what's next? Let's try to find the fifth row. So that's a bit harder. Well, there are many ways of approaching it. So one idea would be to these things here are of the same nature somehow. So that corresponds to temporally lib. It's Fuscatan on one color, if you want, and that's Fuscatan on two colors. So the problem is there any generalization to S colors of these things? So this is, we'll talk about it now. So let's try to find the scholar generalization for this. Scholar generalization. So this is work in progress with Stefan Belinsky, Sherman Belinsky, Mireille Capitaine, and Manuel Collins. The point is that so far we don't have a quantum group or a group. So I'll just speak about these laws here and here which exist with a complete free probabilistic study of them. So what's missing is the quantum group, but we won't care about it. So as the free Bessel law, well, it's a lot depending on two parameters, S and T. So take the free Poisson law of parameter 1. You take power S with respect to the multiplicative convolution, and then you cut down by a projection of trace T. Okay, so here if you want S is greater than 0, arbitrary T is in 0, 1. Okay, so I have the following alternative formula. So pi s t is also equal to pi s minus 1 multiplicative convolutions, and then multiplicative convolution with the Poisson law of t. This has the advantage of working for any t greater than 0. Okay, examples. Well, if you take t equal 1, you get the multiplicative convolution of the free Poisson law. Now, if you take s equal 1, you get the free additive convolution. So we already see from this formula here that, I mean, from a free probability, let's say abstract point of view, these are somehow interesting measures, right? It's a two-parameter family. So here it's the additive semigroup generated by pi, and here is the multiplicative one. So we can expect that these measures have a lot of interesting free probability properties. So we'll have a whole list of results here. I'll write them down. So what are the diagrams somehow associated to these things? Well, instead of, there's a slight problem with Fuscatalan, so I'll rather talk about associated non-crossing partitions. So you take NCS of K to be non-crossing partitions of 1 up to SK with all blocks of size multiple of S. Okay, so this is these are sets introduced by Edelman and studied by Stanley and then another guy, Armstrong. These are known in combinatorics. So what's the relation with these laws? Well, if you take the Stieltjes transform of pi st, so that's a function on z, it's the sum over these non-crossing partitions of z to the k. So k is this number here, it's somehow the size of the partition, and t is the number of blocks of the partition. Okay, so that's a result similar to the fact that the Stieltjes transform of the Poisson law of parameter t, well, is this formula with s equal 1, I mean, with the usual partitions. Okay, so now out of this, or by other means, you can compute moments, and these are the Fuchs-Catalan numbers. Well, you can ask about the support atoms density estimates for these laws. The formulas are similar to those for the Poisson law, for the free Poisson. I mean, it depends on whether t is smaller or equal or greater than 1 and you have an atom. It's similar. Now, we also have a matrix model. So I told you we don't have quantum groups, so well, let's find something else. Matrix models. So I will restrict attention to the case t equal 1, because when t is greater or smaller, you have to take rectangular matrices. It's going to be more technical. So what's the theorem? Well, this is the law of dw to the s. And W is an Sn times Sn Wishart, complex Wishart. And D is a diagonal matrix formed by the S roots of unity, equally distributed. So I take 1n if you want, and then W1n, W square 1n, and so on. Where W is the first S root of unity. Well, of course, the law when n goes to infinity, the asymptotic law. So is this true? I mean, if you have a complex Wishart, you multiply by an independent matrix. There is a formula by Garchik, Letak, and Massam who computes this the moments of this in terms of certain permutations. So then you see what happens and go to the whole machinery finally when you end up with these partitions with these numbers, the Fuchs-Catalan numbers. Okay, so now once you have this model, this suggests a whole number of things about these laws. So it's very, very similar to what happens to the compound free Poisson laws, this kind of matrices. Okay, so we have a compound free Poisson like formula. So compound free Poisson, these are some laws introduced by Speicher, and then can find some results in the book of Hiai and Petz about them. And among these results is a formula exactly of this type, but with D being a real matrix and W being a real Wishart. So this is somehow, these laws here belong to a complex version of this theorem. So let's first make this notation. So I want to remove this S here. So let's put a tilde on the measure when you remove the S here. Somehow law of the S. And then the same assumptions. So what's the result? Well, this measure with a tilde, it's you take the free Poisson of parameter T, and then the measure rho, which is the uniform measure on the S roots of unity. And if you take the compound measure, well, you'll get that. OK, Okay, then the other results now coming from this, once you get to that, the first thought goes to the Poisson limit theorem. So this holds also in this situation. So pi, if you take 1 minus 1 over n delta 0 plus 1 over n rho, rho is the measure on the roots, and then free convolution with itself and time, this will go 2 minus 1 tilde. Okay, so we have all these results about simply these measures, right? Somehow interpolating, parameter family generalizing these ones and these ones. The whole nice structure. Now I have to tell you maybe what's the classical analog of all this, right? So I told you there's no quantum group. So now we know what's here. It's these free Bessel laws. I have to tell you what's here. So now we have many formulas from the classical analogs. Maybe the simplest approach is like this. So I'll just take this formula and I'll put a usual Poisson law here. That's how we'll get the classical analog. PST tilde. I'll take the Poisson law of parameter t, and then I add this rho like this, and that is it. So this is a complex measure, and the support is formed. Support z of w being the first as root of unity, and the density. Well, if you take s equal 1, you get the free Poisson. S equal 2, you get the free Bessel. The Bessel, in this sense, for s arbitrary, you get a kind of s-dimensional Bessel function. So I have some explicit formulas. So maybe the simplest formula is that of the Fourier transform. That's really simple. So if you take, let's call it like this, the Fourier transform of this, take the log applied to z, this is t times exponential s z minus 1. So this exponential s is, you take the usual exponential and then you take only the terms which are multiple of s. Okay, so express of z is sum z to the sk, sk factorial. Okay, so x1 is x, x2 is hyperbolic cosine. In general, we have this formula. Okay, so now, in the last minute, what's the analogy then between classical and quantum? We don't quite understand exactly what happens at the level of groups of quantum groups. So as an analogy, I'll just write down a simple result connecting this and this. Well, what happens is that the Bessel law, it's the law of sum, start down the formula first. So you take Poisson variables of parameter t over s, which are independent, you take s of them, and then you sum over roots of unity. So omega is once again the first root of unity. That's the formula here. Well, in the free case, it's going to be the same thing, but this time the variables will be free Poisson of t over s free. Okay, so that's the result about analogy. And you can see, for instance, from this that the analogy is compatible with the Berkovich-Pata additive bijection. Well, so as a conclusion, we have a fifth row here, free Bessel. And, well, I guess that was it. Thank you. Yeah. yeah, well, this is trivial from this transform. That's how the proof is. Then, well, this you have to count a few partitions, right? I mean, it's standard, of course. This is support atoms density. You have to work a bit. I mean, it's not. You have to do the complex analysis thing, right? This is somehow the main result, and you have to, I mean, to use a result about which are matrices, so it's this Letac thing. I mean, the distribution of this, that's the main result. Maybe I was a bit, that's the main thing so far, I guess. Well, you have to go into this combinatorics of Letac and the other guys, you get to the symmetric group, and then, yeah, by using some bijection of Bn with partitions, you get two partitions to these ones. So that's not trivial. And then the other ones are somehow consequences of interpretations of this. I guess that's the main point. Yeah. So Diffin just kind of computed the determinants in the O(n) case. So the determinant is a long product of Chebyshev polynomials. 95, 96 or something, 10 years ago. But the problem is with the upper term. I mean, the inverse is determinant over determinant. So here we have the DiFrancesco thing, and that anyway we don't quite want to use it because it's very complicated. But the upper term, it's not, you cannot. I don't know about this. Oh yeah, I mean, we looked a bit at what happens at order 1, so that's order 0 somehow, and then goes to infinity. And of course, you can, what happens, what appears is the distance on the Tempered-Lilip diagram. So you have, the Gram matrix is n to the number of loops when superposing, so you can convert it into a distance somehow, right? I mean, you take, I think, k is the number of points minus the number of loops. That makes you a distance on Tempered-Lilip diagrams. And this matrix can be expressed, the Gram matrix can be expressed in terms of this distance. So you have a combinatorial interpretation, of course. Well, no, I perfectly agree. But I don't say that. I'm saying what I want to do is analysis. I mean, from an algebraic point of view, there is an explicit formula, but these results, I guess, they were found and rediscovered, and I mean, it's a bit, sounds like theoretical physics, all this, and the results are, I mean, I agree there is an exact formula, but if you want to get to these concrete things, I mean, you really have to go, let n go to infinity, and, in the case that's S equals 2, so the D is 1, 1, 1, and minus 1, minus 1. But once again, for the proof, I guess you have to compute something. I mean, it's not clear.